Well, without further ado, this is the study for April 4th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 15:31 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green with you again today for our study of the Crucible of Credible Creed. We're still in part one, but we're finishing part one relatively soon. If we finish this, or as soon as we finish this chapter, we'll be at the end of part one of this article, of which there are two parts. And this chapter nine that we're studying now is concerning the King David and the iron furnace of Egypt, which we've looked at in table form, it being the chronology of the pharaohs of Egypt, which in this table that we've just presented go as far as the 40th pharaoh, Osorkon I. Interestingly there. We dated him differently. That's right. In this article, we date Shoshank as having ruled for only 20 or 21 years. That's right. And Osorkon, we date as succeeding him and dying in 938 BCE, which we later adjust once we learn that Osorkon I is actually the same as the Ethiopian Sira I. Then we realize that he's the king whom Asa defeated, whom King Asa of Judah defeated, who was defeated by the army of the Israelites in the year 944 in our chronology. So that the 944 becomes his date of death, and 15 years prior to that, seeing as Manetho says, he ruled 15 years here in Manetho, after Shashak's rule of 21 years. So we had established it in this article as in harmony with the paragraph that we're about to read. But you'll understand probably later on how that can differ, especially when I show you in this year 975 BCE, the same Farmuthi 25 is a lunar day too, which would be the WRS feast if Shoshank's year one was 980, or somewhere around 980, 979. And when we go to lunar day one day earlier, we see that the new moon is very close to midnight, less than 2 hours prior to midnight. So lunar day two could actually be lunar day one, as far as the Egyptians were concerned. So this date also meets the criterion of a WRS feast, according to the particular scholar who established that theory. That was Rolf Krauss, who believed that that was a lunar feast, the WRS feast. Okay, so we have two possible dates for this WRS feast, as we later understood. So therefore, Shoshank's year one could be 980, as well as being 993. And maybe even both of them apply, because how does a king begin to co-rule if he doesn't have a year one? So there's a year one after the death of his predecessor, but also there's a year one when he begins to co-rule with his predecessor. And so these things are a little bit complex. But the incomplete relief in this paragraph that we're about to read, which is paragraph 911, it's the paragraph continuing after the table called the Iron Furnace. The incomplete relief, Pharaoh Shoshank I's victory scene, depicting at Karnak his Palestinian campaign, is certainly the reason for King Rehoboam's year 5 having been adopted without question as the basis for an absolute chronology. See, those people who believe that Shishak of the Bible was Shoshank or Shishank, no matter what his name might be in the different variants, they believe it's the same king, then they say, well, in year five, this Egyptian king must have been in year five of Rehoboam, that is, the king of Judah. In Rehoboam's year five, this king Shishak must have been ruling Egypt. So that's how they established the connection between the chronologies of Egypt and the chronology of the Israelites. And it may be further deduced, this is a maybe, it may be further deduced based on the evidence that only one scene was completed, that Shishak, or Shishak, died very soon after that campaign, whether it was in year 20 or 21. And this point is made in ancient Egyptian chronology. It says here, from Egyptian sources, we do not know when Shishak's campaign took place. Construction work on the scene of triumph began in his year 21, possibly his last year but one. But look what else we see here. And also they say the majority opinion is that the construction work and the campaign were connected to each other, and the campaign did not take place very long before construction work started, in year 20 at the earliest. But he goes on here to say, this is Jansen Winkeln, who wrote this on page 232 of the Ancient Egyptian Chronology, edited by several Egyptologists, but it's from 2006. Eric Warburton, I think he's one of the editors, and there are several editors, at the beginning of Dynasty 22. Okay, so this is the beginning of Dynasty 22, according to Manetho, right here. Right. Oh, I almost made a... I'm about to forget something I was going to say, I think. But the majority opinion is that the construction and the campaign were connected, and that the campaign did not take place very long before construction work started. But that's not necessarily true, as he goes on to say in a footnote on the next page, 233 of this book. He says, several years earlier, 83, right. It could have been, the work in Thebes could still, or Karnak, could still have been begun long after the campaign, could have been begun. So they don't really know that that was the end of his reign when they started to work. But even in our chronology, 959 for year one of Shoshank also, which is his death in our chronology, as we establish later in our later articles, that works for the, if he commenced the construction work on that victory relief in 959, and then died shortly thereafter. That would explain why it wasn't completed. We don't have enough information to know everything. Oh, we never do. But the remarkable thing is both 993 and 980 or 79 also work for year one. They both work for year one of Shoshank. And in fact, both are necessary in order to explain Manetho, with all of the dates given for Manetho for all of the kings of the two dynasties, 21 and 22, with Susen having been given a number 14 and also 35 years, and we've explained how that works with the co-rule of Susen with Shishak or Shoshank. We've explained this before in our earlier discussions of this, but his highest year number. And I've forgotten something I was going to share, and I can't remember what it was now. What's year five? Well, year five of Rehoboam is 973, right? So that's 20 years different, right, from 993. So it fits so perfectly with the idea of the campaign and the victory relief being begun in that year, 973, which was Shoshank's year 21. If his year one is 993, so it fits perfectly there. That's the alignment that looks like it's lunar aligned because of the year 5 WRS feast of Shoshenq in 989, which we've discussed earlier. It's so complex, but there's two ways of explaining it, it turns out, with this other lunar date, as I just, which I just showed you, here in 975 BCE, December 14th, Pharmuthi 25, which was the date of the WRS feast, as recorded. But the highest year number for Shoshenq is year 21 and is held to be attested on the rock stela of Gebel Silsila. The explanation of the reigns of these pharaohs, as we have shown them, is partially to be seen in the various attested regnal years for the different pharaohs, and in some cases co-rulership has been demonstrated to cause reign overlaps. And we know from part 2 of the article Moses, the year 1 of Rehoboam, right, or the year 1 was 977, so his year 5 is 973. That's 20 years after year 1 of Shoshenq in our chronology, as presented in the crucible here. So it fit very, very well with this idea of Shoshenq dying in the year 973, but we later learned that it's not that simple. Oh, I know what I was going to show you. Yeah, the other piece of evidence that we need to look at. The Book of Sothis says that Suzakim, who's also identified as Shishak, and Shoshenq, he's the same person, Suzakim, it says, because it says he brought up Libyans before Jerusalem. This is the king who came to Jerusalem, Shishak. And in the Book of Sothis, it says he ruled 34 years. 34 years from 993 is 959, right? 959 plus 34. Little children, get your parents to help you, but 959 plus 34 is 993. You see? So we actually have evidence that the 993 is correct, and also that 959 could be also the year 21 of Shoshenq, as far as it being his the 21st year of his rule by himself after the death of Susen the second in 980, because he ruled from 1015 to 980, according to Manetho here, where it says he ruled 35 years. So everything fits so well that we don't have a problem, but it's complex. Complex enough that it's confusing. But we said we could not have deliberately caused a lunar alignment in the reign of Shoshenq I with the fifth year of King Rehoboam of Judah. It fits perfectly in both ways that we do it. So this absolute positioning falls in naturally. The total solar eclipse, now we're going to talk about that. We should do that tomorrow because that's complex. I think we better postpone that. Because, well, yeah, we have to postpone that, I think, for today. But that's an important thing. If we could finish this, well, maybe we can finish the paragraph. But there was a solar eclipse in 1340 in Hattusa and Troy, as shown on this in this illustration. The path of the eclipse is shown. The total eclipse occurred within these dotted lines right here, showing that, you know, it included the city of Hattusa, which is this green dot, and the city of Troy, which is that green dot. There was a total eclipse in 1340 BCE, January 8th. And that's important because that meant that we could identify that as year 10 of Mursili based on an eclipse record, a record of an eclipse that he recorded or he wrote down that is interpreted as having been a total solar eclipse. It was in his year 10. He was the Hittite king. Hattusa was, the capital city of the Hittites. You know, it was their big city. So, and now his successor was King Muwatalli, who later fought against Ramesses II in Ramesses year 5, which is near 1310, because Pharaoh Ramesses II, we say, commenced his reign in 1315 BCE, so 5 years later, 1310. But the most important thing we're talking about here now is since Yeah. Well, the eclipse was total also at Troy. That's interesting. I'm not sure why that's significant here. There's probably somewhere else in our articles where the eclipse at Troy is mentioned. I'm pretty sure it is. We're going to talk about that later, I think. By the way, this article now, The Crucible, has been edited. All the typos have been fixed that I could, all the ones I found that I was aware of, that I tried to fix them all. Hopefully I fixed them all. And there are still things to fix in the other articles. But when we look at the reigns of these kings, okay, there were 26 years that Mursili II ruled. We look at the eclipse. He ruled 26 years later in the paragraph. It says that from 1350 to 1324 BCE. That's according to the Hittite chronology. In our chronology of it, it's definitely those dates. And that's somewhat independent of the Egyptian chronology. So it's important when it makes an alignment, which it does. It's what determines that Ramesses II ruled from 1315, because the year 10 of Mursili is 1340, 10 years after 1350. That's when the eclipse was recorded by him. And then he ruled for 16 more years, from 1340 to 1324. And then Muwatalli reigned 23 years in this equation, 16 plus 23 plus 7. And then the successor of Muwatalli reigned for 7 years and then ran away. And then Hattusili made a pact with Ramesses, a peace treaty, in the year 21 of Ramesses. So that's why 16 plus 23 plus 7 equals 46. And let's see now, the pact was made. Yeah. Hattusili signs a peace treaty. In year 21 of Ramesses, he signs a peace treaty. So we could add this 46 up, right? After we subtracted these years from 1340. So 1340 minus, what's that, 46. Yeah, 46, of course. It's 46. 46 subtract from 1340 is 1294. Add 21. Is that right? And we get 1315, right? Yeah, exactly, year one of Ramesses. So it works out. This is why Peter Huber said that Ramesses II's year one was in 1315, because of the Hittite synchronism with this eclipse of Mursili II. So this is why our date stands for Ramesses in 1315 as his year one. Ramesses II, year one, 1315 BCE, based on this eclipse. And the math is done here. What was the year 25 there for? I don't know. Well, it was 25 years after the eclipse that Ramesses began to rule. Anyway, the math is shown in 1315 plus 25 is 1340. That's why, right? 1315 plus 25 is 1340, which was the eclipse. So the math is just very simple. It shows when year one of Ramesses II was. Second Chronicles now, but before we begin, I almost forgot. Let's go and do our daily proverb, little children. We still have a little bit of time, fortunately, and it's Proverbs 14, verses 27 and 28. The fear of Jehovah is life from a spring, that one may depart from a death-dealing thing. The honor of kings is in multitude grand, but princes will fail when no men are at hand. That's the proverb from Proverbs 14, verses 27, 28 for today's proverbial utterance, study of the daily proverb. And 2 Chronicles 26 says, then all the people of Judah took Uzziah, he being 16 years old, And they made him king in place of his father Amaziah. He it was that rebuilt Eloth, and then restored it to Judah after the king had lain down with his forefathers. Amaziah had died, right? 16 years old was Uzziah when he began to reign. Now he's the king later known, or often called, and later, he was called Uzziah probably later, but at the beginning of his reign he was known as, is this it here? No, wait a minute, there it is. Yeah, Uzziah, he was known as Azariah. He ruled after Amaziah. He ruled for 52 years plus one because he became a leper. And then before his son could rule, Azariah had to live the rest of his life, which was probably, we estimate, only 1 year based on all the other things we know about this chronology of the kings. So it all adds up to 430 years from Solomon to the destruction of Jerusalem's temple, right? But in, okay, so that was from Moses part two, the table of the chronology of the kings of Judah that we presented in that article. And where was it again? Here it is. Yeah, it's table H4 in part two of the Moses article, where that came from. And now let's go to 2 Chronicles again, chapter 26. Okay, 16 years old was Uzziah when he began to reign, and for 52 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. After Uzziah got leprosy, he lived in his house, but he didn't rule in Jerusalem during that last time period, which we call 1 year. And he kept doing what was right in Jehovah's eyes at the beginning of his reign, according to all that Amaziah his father had done. And he continually searched, or he tended to search for God, in the days of Zechariah, the instructor in the fear of the true God. And in the days of his searching for Jehovah, sounds like that was the Zechariah who was killed by Amaziah. But when, that's what it sounds like, but Uzziah was alive as a young person at the time when Zechariah was still preaching, evidently. And in the days of his searching for Jehovah, the true God made Uzziah prosperous. And he proceeded to go out and fight against the Philistines and break through the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabneh and the wall of Ashdod, after which he built cities in Ashdod, in the territory, that is, of Ashdod and among the Philistines. And the true God continued to help him against the Philistines and against the Arabians that were dwelling in Gerbaal and the Meunim. And the Ammonites began to give tribute to Uzziah. Eventually, his fame went even as far as Egypt, for he displayed strength to an extraordinary degree. He was also known as Azariah, as we know. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem by the corner gate and by the valley gate and by the buttress, and made them strong. And it's in other places in the Bible where he's called Azariah. But further, he built towers in the wilderness and hewed out many cisterns, for there was a great deal of livestock that became his, and also in the Shephelah and on the tableland. There were farmers and vine dressers in the mountains and in Carmel, for a lover of agriculture he proved to be. Moreover, Uzziah came to have a force engaging in war. Those going out on military service in troops by the number of their registration by the hand of Jeiel the secretary and Maaseiah the officer under the control of Hananiah of the king's princes. The entire number of the heads of the paternal houses of the valiant mighty men was 2,600, and under their control the army forces were 307,500 men engaging in war, with the power of a military force to help the king against the enemy. And Uzziah continued to prepare for them, for the entire army, shields and lances and helmets and coats of mail and bows and sling stones. Further, he made in Jerusalem engines of war, the invention of engineers, that they might come to be upon the towers and upon the corners to shoot arrows and great stones. Consequently, his fame went out to a great distance, for he was helped wonderfully until he was strong. But then we see he became haughty when he became strong. He offered incense illegitimately in the temple of Jehovah, and he got leprosy immediately. He was enraged at when the priests told him he shouldn't be offering incense, and then leprosy flashed up in his forehead. He ended up having to go and live as a leper until his death. And in the meantime, his son ruled during that period when Uzziah was a leper, which we say was 1 year. It's 1 year in the genealogy. As for the rest of his affairs, there they are. It says, the first and the last, Isaiah the son of Amoz, the prophet, has written of those affairs. They buried him in the burial field that belonged to the kings, for they said he is a leper, and Jotham, his son, began to reign in place of him after the death of Uzziah. The official rule of Jotham then began. Habakkuk chapter 2. At my guard post I will keep standing, and I will keep myself stationed upon the bulwark, and I shall keep watch to see what he will speak by me, and what I shall reply at the reproof of me. And Yahweh proceeded to answer me and to say, write down the vision and set it out plainly upon tablets, in order that the one reading aloud from it may do so fluently. For the vision is yet for the appointed time, and it keeps panting on to the end, and it will not tell a lie. Even if it should delay, keep in expectation of it, for it will without fail come true. It will not be late. Look, his soul has been swelled up. It has not been upright within him. But as for the righteous one, by his faithfulness he will keep living. And indeed, because the wine is dealing treacherously, an able-bodied man is self-assuming, and he will not reach his goal. There it is again. Wine is a bad thing, again, as seen there. An able-bodied man is self-assuming, because the wine is dealing treacherously, and he will not reach his goal. He who has made his soul spacious just like Sheol, and who is like death and cannot be satisfied. And he keeps gathering to himself all the nations and collecting together to himself all the peoples. Will not these very ones, all of them, lift up against him a proverbial saying and an alluding remark, insinuations at him? And one will say, woe to him who is multiplying what is not his own. Oh, how long? And who is making debt heavy against himself? Will not those claiming interest of you rise up suddenly, and those wake up who are violently shaking you? And you certainly become to them something to pillage, because you yourself despoiled many nations. All the remaining ones of the peoples will despoil you because of the shedding of blood of mankind and the violence to the earth, the town, and all those dwelling in it. Woe to the one that is making evil gain for his house in order to set his nest on the height, so as to be delivered from the grasp of what is calamitous. You have counseled something shameful to your house, the cutting off of many peoples, and your soul is sinning. For out of the wall a stone itself will cry out plaintively, and from the woodwork a rafter itself will answer it. Woe to the one that is building a city by bloodshed, and that has solidly established a town by unrighteousness. Look, it is not from Jehovah of armies that peoples will toil on, only for the fire, and that national groups. Is it not from Jehovah of armies that peoples will toil on only for the fire, and that national groups will tire themselves out merely for nothing? Merely for nothing, for the earth will be filled with the knowing of the glory of Jehovah as the waters themselves cover over the sea. Is it not from Jehovah of armies that peoples will toil on only for the fire, and that national groups will tire themselves out merely for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowing of the glory of Jehovah as the waters themselves cover over the sea. Woe to the one giving his companions something to drink, attaching to it your rage and anger in order to make them drunk for the purpose of looking upon their parts of shame. And there we see that someone who gives someone else something to drink, it's described there, it's a fascinating thing, they're attaching to it rage and anger. In other words, because they're angry, they give intoxicating liquor to somebody else to make them drunk so that they can make them do something shameful. You will certainly be satiated with dishonor instead of glory. Drink also you yourself and be considered uncircumcised. The cup of the right hand of Jehovah will come around to you, and there will be disgrace upon your glory, because the violence done to Lebanon is what will cover you in the rapacity upon the beasts that terrifies them, because of the shedding of blood of mankind and the violence done to the earth, the town, and all those dwelling in it. Of what benefit has a carved image been when the former of it has carved it, a molten statue and an instructor in falsehood? When the former of its form has trusted in it to the extent of making valueless gods that are speechless, how can the carved image be a good instructor? It can't talk, it can't do anything to move in any way. Woe to the one saying to the piece of wood, "Oh, do awake," to a dumb stone, "Oh, wake up." It itself will give instruction. Look, it is sheathed in gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. But Jehovah is in his holy temple. Keep silence before him, all the earth. And that's the end of Habakkuk chapter 22. So interesting things there, are there not? Fascinating things showing how foolish it is for someone to make an idol god and expect to be instructed by it. The prophet, in Clark's commentary of Habakkuk chapter 2, wasn't it amazing and remarkable how the chronology of Shishak and Shoshank fits so well with the Bible and so perfectly with the chronology that we've seen is based on the Bible, which is called the genealogy. It's so phenomenal, is it not? Just, it's so exciting to see how well it works. The prophet Habakkuk is talked about in Clark's commentary as foretelling the fall of the Chaldeans and of their ambitious monarch in Habakkuk 2, 5, and 10, which was talking about, because the wine is dealing treacherously, it's saying. And he keeps gathering to himself, you know, an able-bodied man who is self-assuming, all the nations and collecting together to himself all the peoples. So just gathering people to yourself doesn't guarantee any success. In other words, it doesn't guarantee that you're a good person. And one will say, woe to him who is multiplying what is not his own. That's why I made the genealogy. I guess that's why. I don't know why. But I made it my own. I made it based on my family history. Anyway, that's all for today. April, I mean, I know I made the genealogy. That's all I know. I don't know exactly why I made it. But April 4th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 16:04 Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Live Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.